Like Call It What You Want, which we know is your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, Vuori is committed to delivering a great experience for everyone, which is highlighted by their new perspective on performance apparel. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. In fact, I'm rocking their Stratotech polo right now, along with their Sunday performance jogger pants, so I can be business on top when I'm on camera, but super comfortable on the bottom. And it's just the best. Vuori gear is incredibly versatile, and it can be used for just about any activity. Running, training, swimming, lounging around, hosting podcasts, doing errands, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/call it. That's Vuori.com/call it. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/call it and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Welcome to Eric Winalda's favorite podcast in soccer we trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside our expert on the number 9 position, Charlie Davies, and the best tour guide you could ask for if you're ever in Modesto, California, Heath Pierce. And we are going to debate and discuss everything that we learned in the U.S. men's national team's 4 games in June. And as a refresher, in case you forgot, it was a 3-0 win over Morocco, a 0-0 draw against Uruguay, a 5-0 win over Grenada, and a come-from-behind in the mud 1-1 draw against El Salvador. But before we hear from Charlie and Heath, I need to announce yet another winner of our $100 Paramount Plus gift card extravaganza, and it is Jake Gnaim. Hopefully I'm saying that right. You just want access, my friend, to one of the biggest catalogs of on-demand content in the world. Champions League, Europa League, NWSL, Serie A, CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers, NFL, movie series, South Park. Woo! It's all happening on P+, so congratulations to you. We don't have a card to give away today, but we will, hopefully, moving forward. So be on the lookout. Make sure you keep giving us that support, both here on the YouTubes and any podcast platform of your choice. But drop us a follow, ISWT Pod on Twitter. That will always elevate your ability and possibility of winning a P+ gift card in the future. All right, Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies, you weren't here with us yesterday as we talked about the World Cup host cities. Congratulations to your Boston Strong, getting one of the 11 cities in America to get that. So let's start there. What were your thoughts on Boston getting selected?
Well, I'm hyped. I mean, so that was the first experience I ever had, was going to a World Cup game when it came to soccer. So 1994, it's my 8th birthday. My dad gets a ticket. He says, we're going. It's Bolivia versus South Korea. Never had heard of those countries at the time. And I come to the stadium and you could just see all walks of life. Everyone's accepted. Face paint, you know, the balloons, all the gear. And that's what hooked me to the sport. So when I'm looking at the future and I'm looking at the Boston community, everyone's coming to the stadium to watch these games, it could potentially change someone's life. All these little kids gives them hopes and dreams, and so I'm excited.
No, it's a big deal, and I'm glad you brought that up. Heath and I shared some personal stories as well, and that's very cool that you got a ticket to go and got to really experience it in a way that I do think it changes your life in a positive way. So it's exciting, and obviously we'll have plenty of time. We got 4 years to ramp up to 2026. We'll have plenty of time to break down all those host cities, maybe even one by one, as we move forward, and what makes all these cities so special, including Canada and Mexico selections as well. But let's talk about this camp that we learned in June. As I mentioned, 4 games. But let's break this down in 3 different ways, Heath. We're going to go tactics, we're going to go personality, and personnel. So let's talk about the tactics. What did we learn from your perspective in this June camp about our tactics, not only individually, maybe putting Brendan Aaronson in the middle of the field, but collectively as well? And do you think Greg Berhalter was pressing the right buttons, him and his coaching staff?
I still think we'll continue to have a number 9 issue. So tactically, I think we're not getting the most out of our number 9. And I also think the number 9's not getting the most out of themselves. Granted, of course, Ferreira, I think, is on top and our starter at the moment, and unbelievable job to get 4 goals, no matter who you play against. But I do think this team has the ability to attack. Now that I've seen a little bit of this tinkering, that we've seen where we attack in a back 3, defend in a back 4. My worry, though, is as the team comes back together tactically, do we have that balance? If our attack's going to come from high and wide fullbacks, is that the best way to attack? Because while it's nice at times, I've continued to see when we, more specifically when we had Brendan Aaronson in there, or a more attacking minded player centrally, they are more linked up into our attacking three or our attacking trio. And I like that. So I think we do have the ability to make those iterations. And I think that's an exciting, it's an exciting thing to think about, though, in this World Cup. I think we'll probably be a little bit more of a conservative team.
Yeah, so Chuck, let's talk about that adaptability, because as we saw against Morocco, Reggie Cannon was playing the right back spot, but he was there to maybe sit a little bit and give us more of a back three, and then Anthony Robinson can bomb forward, and he was bombing forward against Morocco. And I thought that in some ways that pushed and pinned back one of their top players in Achraf Hakimi, and really allowed us to maybe dictate a little bit more of that middle of the field, because we were just being, I don't want to say risk-taking, but we were putting our guys in situations where we had more numerical advantages. And I thought that was a good tactical test for us. And I thought we passed in that game in particular. There was about 15, 20 minutes in the first half where it got a little sketchy when they switched from one point to the other, where maybe we struggled a little bit, but it seemed like we identified how to slow that down against Uruguay. We did a double pivot in the first two games, then obviously went to a single pivot against Grenada, because we should. We're much better than them, and had two attacking midfielders as opposed to kind of two holding. You know, what were your thoughts on the overall tactics? And do you think, to Heath's point, that maybe bombing forward with two wingbacks is the best way to go going forward? Or do you think we're actually a little bit better when we just have one? Because when we have Dest and Anthony Robinson both out there at the same time, that does make us vulnerable on the counterattack.
Shout out to everybody in the comments. Silence of the Lambs. That's a great one. The chorus, the butterflies, David Hurst is the artist. CP's Frosted Tips, yes, kindergarten classroom. This would be a lit kindergarten classroom.
Oh, it would be.
But what I learned about this team is we can consider the strongest part of our group is the midfield, and it's Adams, McKennie, and Musa. That's the trio, and that's not changing. I think what we want to see from McKennie and Musa in particular is that they could be, you know, more active in the attacking third, a part of the play, playing through them, creating chances. I think Musa showed that he does have that number 10 ability. He can be the player who can dribble, play 1-2s. And if the more we have flexibility to change the way we need to play against certain opponents, the better it is. And I think we learned, to what Heath said, we don't have to rely on outside backs giving us width. We don't have to rely on Anthony Robinson, you know, sending 20 crosses into the box, or when Sergiño Dest is there doing the same thing. It's great that we have flexibility. And I think with this group, we learned it's still a work in progress, but I think we're much more confident in who they are and in their identity. And I think they're growing within the system. So I'm pumped about the midfield. And I think it's all going to dictate how well we do. The success is going to come from the midfield and Musa, McKennie, and Adams. And you know, hopefully Christian Pulisic can get going, knowing that these are the strengths and this is the tendencies of our team, and him trying to find isolation, because that's where he's going to be the best, is if we can get him isolated 1v1, or he's just constantly moving and taking one or two touches until he gets into the box.
Okay. No, I like the insight from both of you guys on that. What I think about when I'm listening to both of you is somewhat, let's talk about the disappointment. I was actually disappointed that in these four games, Team Away didn't get a run out at number nine, just to show us what it looked like. We had 45 minutes to spare there against one of those four opponents to take a look. I think that's clear that Greg Berhalter is not even going to consider it, because he's not going to try it in the two September friendlies. And one of which is against Saudi Arabia, which has been confirmed in Spain. So we can talk about that a little bit later in the show. Any disappointments for you, Heath, about maybe something we should have tried and we didn't, or maybe a player that didn't step up when they should have? I mean, any disappointments for you? The only one for me that jumps out tactically, I suppose, is Team Away not getting a run out the number nine and just allowing us to see what that would look like.
I was disappointed in Haji Wright and the chances that he got. That's less tactic and that's more personnel, so I'll leave that for later on. But tactically, again, didn't really show an ability to contribute to the team in the system that we played when he wasn't on the ball or wasn't trying to get the ball in spots. He never really got the ball, but like, there wasn't something else. And the reason I keep going back to what I saw differently with Brendan Aaronson tactically is it's the best that I've seen us press in terms of winning the ball in good spots, picking it off, and not having to play through everything, which is weird because with Yunus Musa on the field, I think we have the ability to play through the lines. But we also need to have the ability to win the ball in higher spots up the field, because I don't think with MMA we can play through every time, or that there's a comfort of, like, you know, the expectation might be a little too high to think that we can play through comfortably through the midfield if it's not Yunus Musa on the ball. Okay. So I say the little disappointment on not having, not seeing another option at this point.
Can we take into consideration that after the Morocco game, Haji Wright got 45 minutes, mm-hmm. and everybody was like, guy scored a penalty, obviously put himself in good spots, was holding up the ball well, helped us transition. Everybody's like, oh, this Haji Wright guy might be the answer and could really maybe help give us more competition.
Greg didn't like him. Let's be honest. Greg didn't like him. He went out there and said it. He basically said it. Like, he didn't like him.
But so that's hard for me. It's hard to evaluate the El Salvador game because that was just a mud bowl, right?
So Greg went after him. That's my point. Greg went after him after that. Like, basically said, like, it's always tough when someone gets their chance and doesn't take it. That's Greg writing him off. Like, we've seen that before with Greg talking about playing time with others when some aren't playing and they're called. Yeah. Like, there is a lot of, like, Greg is not afraid to go out and put a stamp on something when you probably add that performance to the hype that he was getting, to what Greg's now seen for 3 weeks in training. I feel like that's probably, he's probably written off at this point.
Charlie, you agree with this? You think that Haji Wright's out?
I don't think he's out, but right now he's on the outside looking in.
Okay.
Right.
Like, he's behind Pepe, and he could have been ahead of Pepe based on just form.
Yes. Yes. I think that that's very fair to say. And I think it's more than the performances. I'm sure it's the way he maybe carried himself. Maybe he felt like he had already won his spot in a way. Maybe it was just the vibe around the group was, I'm pretty lax and chill because I'm so comfortable. And I think, you know, those things can rub a coach the wrong way. If I was a manager and you bring in a player and you give him an opportunity, but he's already like, I feel like I've made it, you know, and it's not giving 100% commitment first in the training room, first on the pitch, you know, those are the things you want to see. Super excited. Maybe, I don't know if that's the case, but maybe that could play into it. We don't know. But if you're talking about what we saw on the pitch, again, it was from all the hype that was built up, it was a little bit disappointing. So, you know,
but I'm just saying, I just want to remind everybody, because there's some recency bias here, that after the Morocco game, everybody was feeling pretty good about Haji Wright. And we were complimentary of him because of his hold up play, because he found himself in good spots. And obviously it was cool Pulisic to give him the penalty to have that goal. There's clearly a friendship there between those two. And as we've discussed before,
but it wasn't performance based though, Jimmy. I don't think it wasn't necessarily that he didn't get his goal. He didn't get his chances in the box. It was that he didn't do more in a game. The game,
I see.
You're going down to El Salvador. What you saw from this team when they went down a goal was this ability to now tap into something that they developed through qualifying. And that's just a fight, right? And that's one of the upsides that I found with this team, is that tactically throw that out. Sometimes this team is going to dictate play. We saw against Morocco, this team can play. They can play football. Mm-hmm. Like, and probably as good as any generation I've seen in terms of the quality of the players on the field, that you say, okay, we got a nice pitch, nice day against another team that wants to play football. We're going to play. That's what I saw against Morocco. But what I saw against El Salvador was a slow start and not a good performance, but their ability to now flip that switch and say, you know what? Forget all that. Forget Morocco. Forget Uruguay. Yeah, we got to fight. And that's the only way we're going to get out of this. And then you start seeing that fighting, that one-on-one battle, that personality come out of this team that has developed. I wanted to see that from Haji Wright, to say, I'm part of the same generation. I'm part of this Christian Pulisic generation. I'm going to fly into challenges. I'm going to scrap. I'm going to fight. I'm going to get into everything, which I know was representative a little bit of like the dirty uniform reference that I gave in a couple pods ago. But that is what I wanted to see, which is when Ricardo Pepi wasn't scoring for the national team, we're still complimenting him on his ability to get others involved and have an impact and do things better than others in terms of just showing that you can do something on the field, even if you're not scoring goals. Now, still get judged by scoring goals, but that's the thought around Haji Wright. Do more.
Okay, I just wanted to take into consideration that each game had a different look and a different feel. And let's move into personality then, Charlie, because when I saw Morocco, obviously I thought our high press was fantastic. So it kind of merged the tactics and that gave us a lot of confidence. Obviously scoring a bunch of goals only gave us more and more. And I thought that we managed situations pretty well, especially after giving up a couple things and then kind of tightening things up, all things considered in that. Uruguay was a completely different test. And what I really came out of that with that game is, even though maybe Uruguay deserved the result, they had probably more clear-cut chances than we did, we still found a way to get a result, which I think is a testament to being a very good team. And I still remember Christian Pulisic talking trash to that Uruguayan player and like running his mouth, like, okay, buddy. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Keep talking, you know? And I like that there's a little bit of that swagger in our team, that we do have that belief in ourselves, and that we aren't afraid to kick back and stand up for who we are, what we stand for. And we also saw that, to his point, in the El Salvador game, that it just got to a point that was so CONCACAF that we just had to figure out a way to grind and grit our way through that. And we did it to great effect and found a way to get back into that. Again, getting another result. And really what I think that speaks to, when we think about it tactically and from a personality standpoint, we have this adaptability that I think is really important, because we're going to get three different types of opponents at the World Cup as well.
It's going to be an important factor on how we advance out of the group, because you have to be adaptable. You can't be one dimensional. You can't, you know, be predictable, which I think we have been at times throughout World Cup qualifying. You know, how many times did we see Anthony Robinson make the same run, the same pass into his feet or into the channel, and the same cross, and it was on repeat. And we're like, do we have other ways to attack? Or you know, and then if those weren't going wrong, it was like, all right, guys, now we're going to go on the other side, and Timo Weah, you go down, and we're just going to pass it to you. So I think now they're figuring out different passing patterns and when to switch the point of attack, and let's not just, you know, go look for Andy Robinson. This time, Anthony Robinson, I just want you to stay. I don't want you to overlap. Stay back. Christian, you occupy the whole left side. Now we're going to get you 1v1. And so I think now we're starting to see that.
What are you, a coach now, Charlie? You're a coach? You a coach now? You a coach now or something?
All of a sudden, Boston becomes a World Cup host city.
Now Charlie's got a magnet tactical board on his
right by the way, my butterflies. Hey,
so they have a lot of boards in kindergarten rooms. That's
listen to this little anecdote. I went for a drink with a friend of Richie Graham's. Richie Graham was one of the owners of Philadelphia Union and Four Soccer Ventures.
Okay. Here we go.
And his good friend is Rodolfo Burrell, who's the head assistant at Manchester City. And he was out here. This is the only one. Well, Charlie came in hard yesterday, so I was just like, dude, I'm feeling a little insecure right now.
The owner, one of the owners of the Union, and then this other guy, he's the Sultan.
You literally have brought up Damien Hirst to start the show. Damien Hirst is the most successful artist in living times in the United Kingdom, Charlie. So you've already gotten your flex in for the day, and you've got four of them. Okay. Now
that's just one wing of his house, though, Heath. I mean, there's five other
just
wings.
One wing. I know it was one of those Billy Madisons. I heard things in the background. I thought maybe they're having like a petting zoo, like people come over to Charlie's petting zoo that he has at the house. But apparently he used to travel around only with like some sort of little tactical board that had magnets on it always that fit into his pocket, so that if anybody started talking, he would pull out his magnets and start doing like tactical things. And apparently he doesn't carry it around him anymore, but he tried to bring it up and he's like, no, I don't do that anymore. As if he was like a reformed like tactician of like, you know, like I stopped getting the magnets out at the dinner table. But yeah, there was a fun, just thinking about Charlie and the fact that he's a coach now, apparently he's a coach.
Yeah. We're excited for you, Charlie.
You are an analyst, but that sounded like a coach.
Okay. So we've done tactics. We've done personality. Let's talk about personnel. And any players that potentially, I don't want your man of the camp just yet. We're going to talk about that after the break. But in terms of personnel and what we saw, and Charlie, I'll come back to you on this. You know, is it Brendan Aaronson centrally? Is now Brendan Aaronson a super sub when he didn't come off the bench against Granada? He does provide that spark. You know, De La Torre obviously provided a spark for us. I think we need to mention him. I think he solidified his spot in the team. Areola, I thought, was very good when he came on and had his minutes. You know, whatever you think of him, all you MLS haters out there, I think he still provides something that maybe some other players don't. And I think he's a good locker room guy. And I think that's important as you build a team and build chemistry, that you have players that can accept different situations, especially if they're not starting. Is there anything personnel-wise you saw? Cameron Carter-Vickers, I think, was solid in his two games, but it was, you know, came on at halftime against Morocco, started against Granada, started against El Salvador. Like, was he really tested in a way that's going to, what it's going to look like in a World Cup? I'd love to see him a little bit more in the September friendlies.
Jimmy, in this case, no one was really going to get tested, but it was more, how do they fit? How do they move? Can he play out of the back with his feet? You're just trying to get a baseline. And then you're saying, is this someone we could potentially play there? And now we're going to follow and track him. And then for the September friendlies, maybe if he continues to play the way he does, you put him in next to Zimmerman if Richards isn't healthy and Aaron Long hasn't continued to progress.
But let's be honest, Heath, I'm coming to you. Aaron Long looks like he's a lockdown starter. He's the only player I think that started all four games. Maybe Christian did it as well, but it's clear that Greg loves Aaron Long. We've been saying it before, and now that he's had this opportunity to play him, it makes me wonder, everybody, if Miles Robinson had stayed healthy, it feels like he wanted to get Aaron Long in there. So who would he have taken out, Walker or Miles? I don't even really know. That's, I guess, a question we won't have to have answered because Miles is hurt, unfortunately. But anything from you from a personnel standpoint? Because it feels like our goalkeeper situation is sorted, right? Sean Johnson was good. Horvath made a mistake. But, I mean, it's clear that he's got qualities. And then Matt Turner seems like our number one right now because Zach Steffen couldn't come in, unfortunately. So you know, what stands out for you personnel-wise?
Well, it goes back to my point of midfield being the most solid part of our team, because not only McKennie, Moose, and Adams, but you also have Aronson, De La Torre, who I think Luca De La Torre helped himself again in this camp.
Agreed.
And Kellen Acosta, another player who is going to be on the roster. Solid. Mm-hmm. But Gio Reyna, I mean, yes, he could play on the right for Wea, but if Timo Wea, who I think has solidified his spot as the attacking right wing right now, and now he's being linked to Valencia, and I think he'll be playing on the wing too if he goes to Valencia. So I think that you would put possibly Reyna in a slot in the midfield. I think you could play him all over the attacking pitch, actually, all front three, the both wingers and the midfield position. But you
even
have
a false
super
nine, if you
subs.
Want.
You have some super subs in that manner. So I guess it's still the forward depth chart, because whoever does start, and right now it's Jesus Ferreira, you also have to have somebody who's going to come off the bench in that nine position. And I don't think we have that yet. So we're not even 100% sold on Jesus Ferreira for a lot of people, but you know, you're looking at who can come in and change the game. And also that plays into Greg Berhalter, who he's looking at. Jordan Pefuk is not a player you know, is going to stretch the game. If you need a goal, you need someone to run, he's not going to do that. Maybe if you're just lumping balls
Jordan
in.
Maybe it's Jordan Morris now, right? Yeah. Jordan Morris, bombing headers against El Salvador. I mean,
I would say, Jimmy, real quick, is that the thing that I would say is a positive that came out of this, and maybe it's a little too late, and it's kind of a negative, because I think we showed with Luca De La Torre, Brendan Aaronson in the middle, even Jordan Morris now, Paul Ariel. I think we've shown, and Gio Reyna, I think, is a great example that Charlie just mentioned, an ability to play a few different ways. But I don't think we've learned how to play those different ways. I think we've shown flashes of that, which I think in some ways is a security for the future, but it's a little insecurity going into a World Cup. I think we're going to default back to what we've gone with. But when you look at it, to play against a team in a deep block, probably going to want Luca De La Torre on the field, right? You're probably going to want Yunus Musa on the field always. Maybe you're going to want Brendan Aaronson, where a team that's in a deep block is trying to play out, and you have a little bit better of a press to get them disorganized in other parts of the field or in other situations, as opposed to having to have a perfect buildup every time. I think those things are really great, because we're getting to a point from a depth standpoint where we have similar quality in terms of overall quality as a player, but very different types of players that can play in different types of scenarios, which I think helps when you look at a World Cup group of like, how's England going to play versus Iran versus Wales? I'm just not sure that Greg is confident enough to not roll out just what he thinks is the best 11 every single game versus the best 11 based on that individual game, if that makes sense.
No, that's good. I like that point a lot. Everybody, if you haven't already, hit like and subscribe. Turn on your notifications here on the YouTubes. Follow us on Twitter at ISWTPod so you don't miss anything that we're doing, including giveaways. We have $100 gift cards to Paramount Plus that we've been giving away, like Oprah Winfrey giving out cars. And we'll continue that long into the summer. So keep that support coming. And then, of course, if you're on a podcast platform listening to this later, make sure you drop a subscription there and also leave us a 5-star review. We wouldn't say no to all the positive love you want to give us with those reviews. Okay, Charlie, I come to you. We haven't talked about the right back spot. It's like the one area that we haven't discussed. Reggie Cannon, solid in some areas, maybe not so solid in others. I don't think he necessarily solidified his spot, but I think he's still in the conversation. Joe Scally, what do you think his situation is? George Bello got a little bit of a run out. DeAndre Yedlin, I mean, I feel like, okay, we've identified some things and maybe solidified some positions. And as you mentioned, Charlie, the midfield is looking stacked at this point, especially when Gio Reyna comes back and our wingers is included in that. But number nine, some spots in our back line. Who our number one is at goalkeeper, though it looks like Matt Turner. Still some question marks, but we haven't really touched this outside back position. What are your thoughts on what we're seeing so far in that area of the field?
Well, I think Joe Scally has potential, but he didn't do well, to help his case. I think Serginho Dest is the right back, Anthony Robinson are the left back. In terms of backups on the right side, you're set. I mean, it's Yedlin is two. That I'd say Reggie Cannon now is three, and you're looking at.
So Dest is kind of like your number one on the right, and your number two on the left behind Anthony. And Then you have Yedlin and Cannon. Okay.
Yes. And then, you know, if you're looking at this year, if there's one player that can really boost his stock heading into the World Cup, it's Scally. I mean, if Joe Scally is playing really well in the Bundesliga, I think we're going to see him included in the group. I think it's one of those things where he didn't take his opportunity, but you saw like flashes of how he could be good. You know, when he made that big challenge, he lost the ball and he won it back just with a strong challenge. You're like, okay, there's potential here.
Yeah, you can see it.
He just hasn't put it all together yet.
Right.
And so it's one of those players that over the course of time, I think he will be a legitimate candidate to start. But right now, I think he's still a work in progress, like a lot of these guys.
Okay, so I got Charlie's thoughts on that. I think we all concur with that, Heath. So we don't really do this very often. We evaluate the players a lot, but what about the coaching staff? I mean, what did you think about Greg and how he handled these four games? And what are your thoughts on him overall and everybody else that's involved on that side of things?
I would say that this team is pretty well bought into what he's doing from outside looking in. And I don't even know if that's true, but based on results, based on the response of the team, based on the wide array of opponents we played in this four-match window, this team is bought in and they're confident in themselves, but they're also confident in what their plan is. But I still look at it with a little bit of I think there was some tinkering that we saw when we built out with a three and defended with a four and things like that I've already mentioned. But I think this team looks motivated. Now, it gets a little harder as you get closer to World Cup. As is Brendan Aaronson going to be happy about being now? You get selected for a World Cup, you're happy.
I mean, if Brendan Aaronson balls it up for Leeds and starts crushing it in the Premier League, it's going to be very hard not to start him for our national team. I'm just throwing that out there. Now, yeah,
saying you can't not play him, and then we put our lineups out, and he's not playing.
I know.
The real thing.
And like, the same goes for Gio Reyna. The same goes for Gio Reyna.
Same goes for Yunus Musah and Weston McKennie and Tyler Adams. Like,
you know what? You know what I think? It was actually a nice silver lining, I'm sure. This is why they had this FIFA window, but we're going to have a month of their club form before those September friendlies, maybe even 5 weeks. And I think that's going to be really important to see how certain players are fitting into potentially new clubs. We'll use Brendan Aaronson, Ricardo Pepi. And yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I think that's going to dictate a lot, man. Those two games are going to be massive for a lot of guys. Not only the ones that are on the bubble, but also like the Brendan Aaronsons of the world that are trying to break in and become regular starters for the team. Charlie, I'll come to you now on the coaching staff. What did you think about Greg Berhalter? Just mind you, we only gave up one goal in four games. So from a defensive perspective, even though we made a couple of changes, it always seemed like we were pretty stout defensively. It had an identity of how we wanted to play behind the ball.
Well, once we understood what I think the purpose of the four games was and kind of the cadence, because, you know, you're like, oh, I want to test. I want to see players. But ultimately, he was saying, hey, I got my group. I know how we're playing. I want some continuity. I want people to get rhythm. But I'll input somebody here and I'll input someone here. Overall, I'd say pretty good. I mean, you beat Morocco 3-0. I think the scoreline didn't really highlight how the game really – I don't think it was a clear representation of how the match was. But it's a 3-1 nonetheless. And then you look at the Uruguay game, and Uruguay, yes, they should have won. I mean, but Sean Johnson stood tall, and I thought that was a great game for him to say, hey, I won an MLS Cup, I'm doing my thing, I should be considered in this game.
I think I'm going to use that really quick, because I think this is important. Based on how Sean Johnson performed, and there's other players we can throw into this, but he basically told Greg with his play, you can trust me. You can no matter what the situation is, no matter who we're playing against, you can trust me to go out there and make plays. And I think that's a really important thing. And I think that's what we all tried to do when we were with the national team as well. You want to put yourself in a position where first you've done enough to earn the opportunity. And then second, when you get the opportunity, you become somebody that the coach can trust because he knows what you bring to the table every single game, which always gets back to Heath's point of trying to be a 7 or 8 out of 10 every time you step on the field. All right, everybody, we're going to take our first and only break of In Soccer We Trust. When we come back, we're going to name our man of the camp. Hopefully that's possible. I don't think we're going to have the same answer. And we're also going to talk about the players that maybe Greg Berhalter should give up on for this World Cup cycle, and maybe they'll be a part of it next time going forward. So don't go anywhere.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back, everyone, to In Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside
Jimmy Conrad.
Two of my favorite former
Cream US Cheese Conrad
team players. That's my new nickname, Cream Cheese over here. I'm here with Charlie Davies and Hollywood Heath Pierce, and we are breaking down what we learned from this June camp, 4 games with the U.S. men's national team. Heath, I'm going to come to you first. I'm going to put you on the hot seat. Let's talk about who is your man of the camp. Who was the player that stepped up and really put his stamp on things, either to solidify his position as a leader, perhaps, or as the number one in goal, or as the man in midfield, or as our number nine? I mean, who really stood out and made the biggest difference for you over these 4 games?
Oh, God, it's so hard to pick one player because every game was different. I'm going to give you a really long preface before I cowardly give you a name. But, like, you know, each game was different. Each match was different. I would love to. I mean, if I had to go consistently, I think I'm not going to say Epictetus Casanova.
Yeah, he said Eunice. He said Eunice.
I'd say Eunice is probably the one that was the most consistent for me in this camp, but wasn't a star in every single game. And I think that's sort of the sign of somebody that you can trust, that you can play with his age, just hoping that he's getting consistent games come the fall for his club team. But I would have to say him. Brendan Aaronson, I thought, was average against El Salvador, but very good against Morocco. Two very different games, but I don't think he was ever bad. But I'd have to probably give it to Yunus Musa in terms of his consistency over 4 games, if that's what we're judging. Yeah.
Okay, so Yunus Musa comes from Heath Pierce. If you guys want to join in on this conversation, let us know who your man of the camp was in the comments right now. Hit us up on ISWT Pod on Twitter. If you're listening to this later with your man of the camp, we'll definitely engage with you there on Twitter as well. Now I'm going to throw it over to Charlie. Chuck Wagon Davies, take it away. Who is your man of the camp, Chuck?
My man of the camp is Yunus Musa. But I will say, most surprised by Luca Della Torre. I think he moved forward the most. I think he benefited the most from this camp. If I had to pick one player, it's Luca Della Torre. Obviously, he can't fit into this midfield. It's stacked, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think he's going to be an important cog in terms of coming into the game and winning possession, getting in good spots, generating chances in those matches that we need a little bit more from creativity, a little bit more of someone who's willing to run at defenders and play 1-2s. So I think he will play an important part.
Charlie, on that, do you think that he's developed in these last few games? Because we were a little critical that he was a little bit of a pass back Pete, a little bit of a square ball player his first few games, and now he's starting to have a little bit more of that range of dribbling and passing. Has that changed for you, or I mean, just generally I would say
not so much he's developed. I think it's just the confidence playing in the group. And so when you feel like you've done enough to win the respect of everybody, and you know when you're in a game, this is more so for a number nine, players are going to look to you and try and get you the ball. You're the first option when you've won their trust. When they say, you're the best case scenario for us to score or create. As soon as I get the ball, my eyes are up and I'm going to look for you. And it's the same thing with Christian right now. Players get the ball and they're like, where's Christian? But I think we're starting to see them not just rely on Christian. And for Luca Della Torre, he's playing well. He's been able to break pressure. So once you are impressed by a team and you play to a player and he gets out of it and he's looking for ideas, then you say, okay, we can depend on him. I think that allowed him to grow within this team. And so he took the most steps forward with this camp because he's just so clean and he's smooth. He makes good decisions, but he's also now looking to go forward and not relying on other players to do it.
Now I'm going to jump in on De La Torre. What I think he is also very good at just in general is his recognition of taking what's being given to him.
So was he your player of the window?
No, my player of the window, Heath, actually wasn't a player at all. It's Greg Berhalter, everybody.
Stop,
no, I'm just kidding.
I was about to take it.
Damien Hurst were going to come off the wall. And there's a little button that we're on this thing called StreamYard to do this. And there's a button that just says leave studio. And I was hovering over that when Jimmy went down that route.
I was about to say, okay.
No. I'll get there. But with regard to De La Torre, and I agree with you, Chuck. I think he took the biggest strides to solidify his position and how much value he brings to the team in different situations. But what I like about his individual games, if he can notice that there's a little bit of space in front of him, he takes it, right? There's no hesitation. And also, I thought in El Salvador game, because he hit a couple deep crosses and things that I've been looking for. Like at some point, if they're taking away crosses to get to the end line, I feel like De La Torre does a nice job of like, all right, they're giving us a space. I'm just going to dump it in, even if I'm a little bit deeper. And obviously we took advantage of it and JMO scored.
Hey, Julius now, is coming at you hard. I'm just,
well, that's that. Well, you know what? We share the same initials, JC.
Jimmy's in a shipping container. That's so funny. Jimmy's laying on a yoga mat doing this podcast facing upwards.
I can't confirm or deny where I am right now, but
someone said you're on a pool floaty. If you were to zoom out, you'd be in a pool laying on a floaty right now.
All I want to say is he's namaste.
He's inside the tire of a monster truck.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, if you can't see this and you're just listening right now, go find our channel on YouTube and you'll have a good idea of what my background looks like. I can't confirm or deny any rumors at this time, but namaste. I actually thought that Aronson showed and demonstrated that he has tremendous value when he starts his starting positions in the middle of the park. I thought Pulisic actually demonstrated some good leadership. I think Charlie touched upon it, where he not only is looking to create some space and get into 1v1 situations for himself, but also to hold up play so that he can bring other people into the game. I think that's important. And I really was impressed with him handing off the penalty to Haji Wright. I thought that was a very cool gesture, and I think it speaks to the maturation of him as a leader. But it's hard to go against Yunus Musah, and I think Yunus Musah would be my player of the camp as well because of his adaptability. We asked him to do a couple different things in midfield based on the opponent. And it was a double pivot for the first two games. Granada, he didn't play. Did he come on off the bench? It wasn't as much of needed in that one. But in El Salvador, we needed him to push a little bit higher and play off the shoulder a little bit higher of Tyler Adams in that particular match. And I thought he did it to great effect, especially when we went down a man. He really took the responsibility of, like, I'm going to figure out a way to still have an impact and influence on this game. And I thought that he showed a lot as well. So it's hard to go against Yunus Musah. I do want to say something in support of Jesus Ferrer, though, because – outside of his four goals, he created an opportunity against Morocco right before halftime, a great opportunity. Obviously, we want him to hit the back of the net. But when I compare him to what Raul Jimenez is doing for Mexico, Raul Jimenez isn't getting those types of opportunities. They've been really stifled in that transition game, and he's not really getting himself in great spots to finish. But Jesus Ferrer is doing that. He had a couple good chances against Uruguay, not clear cut, not as clear cut as the Morocco game, but still pretty good chances. Then obviously scored four against Granada. And then when he came on at halftime against El Salvador, within 5 minutes, he's already in a 1v1 situation against the goalkeeper. And I don't want that to be lost in I don't know, the shuffle, whatever the phrase is there, of yeah, he scored the four goals, and yes, he played well, but there's something to be said about being in good spots, and eventually you hope that he'll do the same in the World Cup, and when he gets there, he'll hit the back of the net. But I worry as a coach when I'm coaching if my players aren't getting themselves in those positions, because the finishing seems like, even though it's hard and difficult, that it's getting into those spots that I think is the hardest. Maybe Chuck, you feel different about the number nine spot, but I thought that Ferrer deserved at least a shout if we talk about our man of the camp.
No, I think he's made progress, and it's also to the detriment of the other strikers who didn't get their, you know, they didn't take their opportunity. I mean, Haji Wright, we saw some things, but then ultimately he didn't impress. And then Greg Berhalter wanted to point him out that he he didn't take the opportunity. So, which allows Ricardo Pepi to still be floating around.
He's there. He's floating around
in the top three right now. You know, there's a lot of players who stand a big chance to gain some momentum. Daryl Dike, if he can get going, Josh Sargent could still come up. You know, whoever's scoring goals in fit will be in the conversation. Mm-hmm. But right now, Jesus Ferreira is your guy, and it's because he fits the system. Now, pressing and you know, working on both sides of the ball, good runs, getting on the ball, but hold up play, he still needs to improve drastically to be, you know, running the point for the U.S. men's national team in a World Cup. So,
So
he can get there.
I agree with you. And I, the start of the season is going to be so huge for so many of these players. Most, I guess for me, Ricardo Pepi in particular. Heath, me and Charlie both named like five players each. You only named Yunus Musa. Was there any other honorable mentions you wanted to throw out there for man of the camp?
I continue to look at Brendan Aaronson as somebody who has an impact that's probably not going to come in the form. I mean, he's got a lot of assists in the national team, by the way, and decent amount of goals, but maybe he doesn't. But he's just a player that I think the team is better when he's on the field in all those ways. Like I'm talking about pressing, doing some of this dirty work that triggers the press, that forces people, like, you know, sometimes you're waiting on the field and all of a sudden you see someone go, you know, you've got to go next or otherwise the play breaks down, that sort of thing. He just brings a lot to this team and an energy and a hunger that we're seeing through his development at the club level that I want to see that continue. So he was one as well. And Walker Zimmerman continues to impress me more and more. And maybe it's less so Walker, but more so the security that we're getting having a traditional center back on the field that wasn't so much what we saw for years of, oh, you got a good left foot in John Anthony Brooks and his ability to distribute the ball. But, you know, he's beeping a little bit when he's on the turn, like a 16 wheeler or 18 wheeler. And so and I think that's something different. Like
Hey, everybody, Heath doesn't like John Anthony Brooks.
I'm going to invite John Anthony Brooks to Thanksgiving this year. I'm not sure if he'll come, but just for the record, I just think that for Walker Zimmerman, we have now established a back line that has a rhythm to it, that has a purpose, that has a leader. And while it may not be the highest quality that we want in terms of a player that has more tools, it's at least established and steady and confident. And it's like, okay, let's move on because we've got something there. And I think that's another part of the game. And then Sean Johnson as a third, we don't know who's going to be playing in the World Cup come World Cup time. We could have both of our one and two not having played maybe played three games from now until then. And so having somebody that I think may be able to challenge on some level or at least push those players to really be in top form or Greg's going to go elsewhere, I think is the best case scenario for the two players that are obviously our one and two at the moment.
Okay, now let's pivot then over to which players Greg should maybe give up on at this stage, given that we only have two more games left before he's got to name a 26-man roster. I'll go first. Usually I go last. I'm going to go first on this one. I'll give you three names. I'm going to say Joe Scally. I'm going to say George Bello. And I'm going to say Malik Tillman. And when I looked at these players, they didn't make the most of their opportunities, but then I went and looked at their ages. Joe Scally's 19. George Bello's 20, and Malik Tillman is 20 as well. The future is incredibly bright for all three of these guys. I mean, I'm really excited about their futures, but there's always going to be a handful of players where maybe their time isn't now. And I just think that maybe they're going to be having to look towards 2026 to break into the roster and be something special for us then. Heath, I'll actually throw it back to you. You know, which players of this June camp roster do you think that Greg maybe should be looking past now and giving more of these minutes, valuable minutes in these next two games to somebody else?
I would say that both those players are still fringe, like not completely written off. Maybe Joe Scally's written off at this point for the World Cup. But I'd say Tillman. I think Tillman, if he goes in and he's playing regular games, I think Greg likes him. I think Greg's going to continue to protect him and nurture him as a player. Cause you could see there are some things there. They didn't materialize into anything worthwhile. In fact, more negative than positive, obviously, over this camp. So I would say he's one that if he's playing, I think he's going to continue to be nurtured in this way. But George Bello, it's hard. Like you take Joe Scally out, you take George Bello out, and now you've got Serginho Dest as your backup left back. I think that's a little bit fearful, but no one's really stepped up to take that.
And as good as Bello is on the ball and how comfortable he looks and his obvious athletic qualities, he might also not be ready when we're talking about a World Cup, but certainly international quality, just maybe not World Cup quality. So I agree with you. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that I would.
Yeah, well, let's throw it out to the audience. Anybody in the comments, if you want to let us know who you think we should give up on at this point, we get a shout for Christian Roldan, 32 caps, zero goals as an attacking player. That's a stat that's out there. Charlie, I'll come to you. Any players you feel like we should just give up on? Give up on seems pretty dramatic. I feel like it's just for the time being, because I think a lot of, especially these younger players that we're mentioning.
Yeah, it's kind of harsh.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit harsh. But there might be a player like Roldan who, if he doesn't make this World Cup, he's probably not going to be anywhere near the 2026 team.
Right. There's not a player I'd say give up on. George Bello, I don't think he's got the quality enough to play with the national team now, but because that's a position that we need somebody to step into.
Oh, the MLS attackers are coming hard right now. They got three of the four. Sorry, Charlie, I got distracted.
Yeah, but you know, he stands a great chance if he produces and plays to get back in the conversation. So you don't want to say give up, but if you had to make the roster in next week or, you know, then after the next camp, then yeah, George Bello would be on it. Joe Scally would be on it. Again, those two players can flip a switch and all of a sudden they're playing the Bundesliga matches and they're starting every game and then they're here. You know, Mark McKenzie, he could flip a switch and be in the conversation for center back. Tillman, he didn't show enough, so I would drop him too. But if he plays at Munich, which I don't see him stepping in and playing and getting considerable minutes at Bayern Munich, but if
you don't
if
think
he
he's going to get in over Muller or Kimmich or Goretzka, come on, man, have some.
Yeah, Kimmich, you move to the side and Tillman, you can play over him.
No, I would love that if that happened, but I don't see a tall order.
I don't see that happening, and so I think we're pretty set with the roster. In terms of the guys, I don't think anyone's going to come out of left field necessarily. That's always a possibility, but I think we're pretty good. So now it's based on form, who will play and who won't play.
Well, I mean, you look at Sebastian Legette, you look at Roldan, key players under Greg up until now, and now with Luca De La Torre, and then you're talking about the return of Giorena. Like you're talking about a depth pool. Okay, you get to 26. Maybe there's a surprise in there that you thought that was maybe on a bubble, but you're starting to push some of these players out. I do think it is a toss up where I think Areola is still heavily. I think maybe Areola or Jordan Morris go. I don't know if both do.
Agreed.
But I start to look at the fact that on 23 players, if we're pretty confident in three center backs, or you know, likely four. And we're going to have a versatile back line where you bring three on your fullbacks. That would be seven. You're still working with pretty good numbers. Three goalkeepers, you're at 10. You've now got 13 players that you've got to put through your midfield and your attacker. So you're going to have to go to that depth. And you can't, you know, like that's at 23, let alone 26.
So I'm reading right now that the FIFA World Cup 2022 squad submission guidelines and rules. The deadline date for submitting the final squad for all 32 teams is set 30 days before the World Cup opening match, which I believe will be what, October 17th. So that's going to be maybe less than a month after those two September friendlies, or around a month. That is interesting. I want to make sure we all knew that, because there's going to be a nice run up to that and a lot of fun podcasts leading into that big roster announcement. But guys, I'm going to call the end of the show here. I want to get your final thoughts. Charlie, I'm going to come to you first. We have a big week of podcasts next week, so make sure you have subscribed if you haven't already. Hit like, turn on your notifications, all that good stuff. We appreciate your support. We just rolled over 5,000 subscribers, which is a very big deal on the YouTube. So thank you for all of your love and adoration and support for your three favorite former U.S. men's national team players. But Charlie, final thoughts for today's podcast in terms of what we learned from this June camp, or anything else you want to talk about?
I would just say Luca De La Torre took the most steps forward, and that we know his roster spot is solidified, one. And two, knowing that how deep and talented our midfield is, he's probably not going to be a starter, but very influential off the bench. So Luca De La Torre, I think, moved forward the most, benefited the most from these recent games. And
He's still got, just to jump in really quick on De La Torre, Heracles got relegated in the Eredivisie, his team. So
he has a clause to leave. He has a clause to leave if they get relegated, though. So, like, he will be leaving.
He will be leaving, but it's just like, where does he go? Because obviously that's going to be an important part of it. I think he's solidified no matter what, but
well, talking about it would help if he went. Possibly.
That's right, in Belgium.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could see him go there with Ronny Dyla, who just departed New York City FC. So that could be interesting play for him. But you know, as a player, you got to put yourself in the best possible situation where you are going. Nothing's ever guaranteed, but you're in a position where you're going to play every week because that's the only way you're going to get on the World Cup roster. If you're not playing, then you're probably going to miss the boat unless you're Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie. Right. You know, other than that, if you're not playing, you might miss the boat. So.
Because it was because a coach can use that against you, which is the last thing you want is your coach going, well, I'm not playing for your club. I'm going to go with somebody else. That's a great final thought. How about you, Heath Pierce? What do you got for us?
No, I mean, I pretty much said it for today. The only thing is, again, I continue to be excited about where things look. My final thought is Jimmy talked about these 19s and 20 year olds, but come 2026, we're going to have a bunch of 19s and 20 year olds that are 15 and 16 now or 14 and 15 now. That are going to be challenging for those spots. So while this is sort of an eye-opening World Cup for us in terms of our development, we could go far, and we're looking towards 2026. There's a wave of players that are going to be challenging these same exact players. That'll be interesting to see kind of who rises as we go and host the Three Nation World Cup.
What a great problem to have. The future is bright, everybody. So thank you for listening to In Soccer We Trust. On behalf of producer Des, producer Alex, Charlie Chuckwagon Davies, and Hollywood Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Conrad saying thank you for listening and watching In Soccer We Trust. We will see you next week with three fresh new shows for you. We'll see you then. Later.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount+.